From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Boston, Massachusetts, 1951. A four-year-old girl named Temple said her first words that year, 2 years after she was diagnosed with autism. In 1949, autism was not considered as nearly as common as it is today. Doctors also believed that Temple had brain damage. A nanny spent hours playing games related to speech with the young girl, and finally at age four, Temple began to speak. In another school and in another state, she might have been limited throughout her life, her career options, but Temple found tremendous mentors as she passed through elementary and high school. She discovered a love of science and a passion for working with animals. Temple focused her work on humane livestock handling. She has said that it is ethical for humans to eat animals, but she thinks it's unethical to cause the animals unnecessary fear or stress or pain. Her visual mind helped lead to the design of a new kind of corral, a curved design that reduced so much of the stress that, for example, cows feel when they're being led to slaughter. Her full name is Temple Grandin. You might have seen the movie about her remarkable life in which she was played by Claire Danes. Later this week, Temple Grandin will visit the Finger Lakes. She's going to participate in three separate events. One of them will focus on livestock handling. Another is a free public presentation at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. And on Friday, she'll join the Happiness House Autism Conference, and you can still register for that conference. We're going to be talking about that this hour. We are talking about autism, inspired by Temple Grandin's visit, and let me welcome our wide-ranging panel, both here and in our Geneva studios this hour. Cheryl Coppola is here, and Cher is the Vice President of Foundation and Development for CP Rochester and Happiness House. It's nice to have you in studio, Cheryl. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Lynn D'Amico is here. She is the Vice President of Children's Services for both CP Rochester and Happiness House. Lynn, thanks for being here.
And thank you.
Katie McGowan's here, the Autism Coordinator for both CP and Happiness House. Nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
And in our Hobart and William Smith studios, WEOS, hope you're listening on 89.5 FM if you're in the Finger Lakes. Mary Kelly is an Associate Professor of Education at HWS. Mary, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us, Evan. Happy to be here today.
Yeah, Diana Baker's here as well, an assistant professor of education at Hobart and William Smith. Diana, thank you for taking the time.
Hi there. Thank you. So glad to be here today.
It's a full calendar for Temple Grandin later this week, and I want to start with Cheryl Coppola just about the value of bringing her in for this Friday event. If you still want to register for the Thinking Across the Spectrum conference that is on Friday, you can do that. It's at the Crosswinds Wesleyan Church, and that is on Middle Cheshire Road in Canandaigua. What does it mean to you to bring in someone like Dr. Temple Grandin, for example?
Sure. Oh, we are so thrilled and excited to be having her. 4 years ago, our CEO, Mary Boatfield, had gone to New York City to listen to Temple Grandin. And Happiness House is the impetus to bringing her to the Finger Lakes area. So very, very excited.
In a moment, there's a TED Talk with Temple Grandin, and you might have heard her on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. She's been in a lot of high-profile places. Again, that movie played by Claire Danes. But I'll play in a moment a cut from Temple Grandin's TED Talk so you get a sense for sort of her dynamic speaking and her passion for this subject, because her work is not only focused on the humane treatment of animals, but Mary Kelly, her work has also been on advocating for people with autism and on educational approaches. So you've got an event with her. It's a free event at Hobart and William Smith, and that is on Thursday night at the Vandervoort Room. It's at 7 p.m. It's free and open to the public. And what does it mean to Hobart and William Smith to have Temple Grandin coming?
Well, it's just such a fantastic opportunity for our students to meet Temple Grandin, to hear her ideas directly. You know, often in our education classes, students will read work that she's written, maybe have seen her TED Talk, but to have that opportunity to have her here and to share her experiences, I think will really raise a lot of awareness, both about autism and advocacy, but then also about this humane treatment of animals. It's something that I think maybe students aren't always making those connections, and so I think it's really interesting for her to really give voice to both of those issues that are important to her.
We have a sort of a full week here on Connections on these subjects. Tomorrow, in our 1 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about what it means to be a dairy farmer in 2015, and we'll talk about animal husbandry with a great panel tomorrow. So we'll focus a little bit more on the animal husbandry side of things tomorrow. This hour, we're going to be focusing on approaches to autism, some of what Temple has said, some of what we're going to talk about at the conference on Friday. And Professor Baker What do you get sort of most excited to hear about from Temple Grandin on Thursday night at Hobart and William Smith?
Well, I've seen Temple speak before, and it's really been an important experience for me personally, and so I'm just really, really glad to share that experience with my students, for them to hear the way that she describes her, the way she thinks about things, and to be able to carry that with them as they work with, as they go into teaching careers in other directions.
She's got such a remarkable life story, and she tells it so compellingly. And Katie McGowan, if people want to get involved with Friday's conference, again, Temple Grandin is the keynote speaker at Thinking Across the Spectrum. It's on Friday. The conference starts when, by the way?
The conference starts at 8 a.m. Registration will start. Registration goes from 8 to 8:30, and then speakers will begin at 8:30.
Okay, and at this late stage, even though we're 3 days away, you still have spaces.
Yes,
so for families, et cetera, you want to go out on Friday and do that, they can call you.
Yes, they can call me.
The number
is 315-789-6828.
Do it again more slowly.
315-789-6828.
Okay, that's how you get involved with Thinking Across the Spectrum on Friday. Lynn, before we hear from Temple, a short clip here. What would you say is the goal of what's going to go on Friday with this conference?
Well, again, I think from our perspective, it is obviously being able to have someone of the caliber of Temple Grandin come and speak at our conference, which, you know, as Cheryl said, we're thrilled. And to know that we would be having such a cross-population of people coming to our conference, we have families, we have individuals with autism, professionals, people who, you know, are working in the field. And also, you know, as we've heard Mary say, that we want that experience to hear her speak, because her story is so compelling, and it will mean so much to all of us in whatever capacity we're there in to have that perspective and understand where she's coming from. We did have Eustacia Cutler at our first autism conference several years ago, Temple's mother, which had such an impact. So we're hoping that that will be the same. But also some of the other sessions, very much related to autism, when we look at sensory integration, we look at health and nutrition.
Advocacy,
which are very, very important when you're talking about individuals for autism and their families and anyone who may work, you know, with that population.
I want to start our discussion on some of these specific approaches to autism with a clip from Temple Grandin's TED Talk speak 5 years ago. And in the clip you're about to hear, she's describing the way her brain works. And she talks about how visual she is. Now, if you saw the movie in which Claire Danes played her, they did a really nice job of illustrating how her brain works. And when she thinks about different things, she says it is like having Google images in your brain. When people talk to you and you just scroll through image after image after image, it's very visual. And it is a different way of thinking about the world, obviously. And that's why she thinks there are really strong abilities that are really fertile for career building and all of these things if we work with children with autism and get them inspired. But she says we don't always do that as effectively as she wishes. So let's listen to what she has to say about that.
I really get fed up when the teachers, especially when you get away from this part of the country, they don't know what to do with these smart kids. It just drives me crazy. What can visual thinkers do when they grow up? They can do graphic design, all kinds of stuff with computers, photography, industrial design. The pattern thinkers, they're the ones that are going to be your mathematicians, your software engineers, your computer programmers, all of those kinds of jobs. And then you've got the word minds. They make great journalists. And they also make really, really good stage actors. Because the thing about being autistic is I had to learn social skills like being in a play. You just have to learn it. And we need to be working with these students. And this brings up mentors. You know, my science teacher was not an accredited teacher. He was a NASA space scientist. Now, some states now are getting it to where if you have a degree in biology or a degree in chemistry, you can come into the school and teach, you know, biology or chemistry. We need to be doing that. Because what I'm observing is the good teachers for a lot of these kids are out in the community colleges. But we need to be getting some of these good teachers into the high schools. Another thing that can be very, very, very successful is there's a lot of people that may have retired from, you know, working in the software industry. And they can teach a kid, and it doesn't matter if what they teach them is old, because what you're doing is you're lighting the spark. You're getting that kid turned on. And you get them turned on, then you'll learn all the new stuff.
All right, that's Temple Grandin at her TED Talk from 5 years ago, talking about how to light the fire inside a child with autism. Let me go around the table here in our studio, and then we'll kick it to the Geneva studio. I'll start with Cheryl Coppola. Cheryl, when you hear her describing how to reach kids and her own experience, what do you think?
I guess as a parent of a child with a disability, I think she has a message to be shared with not only people affected by autism, but also people that have individuals with disabilities in their lives, whether it be a family member, a parent, a child. I was really taken aback by, you know, just that clip that you just shared with us. So from, I guess, more from a parent's perspective mm-hmm. than a professional's, I want her message to be shared with everyone.
She's essentially saying there's so much brilliance out there, but sometimes you have to do different things to reach it, and sometimes you have to think about different ways to reach it, and you're nodding right along with that.
And that is true for my child with Down syndrome. My child, his language is sign language. And if you were to interact with him, he understands you receptively, but expressively he's manipulating you just as much as, you don't really know about any individual until you actually get to know. And that's not just with, you know, people with disabilities, but yes, I think, you know, the barrier that he has with communication is similar to people who have autism that, you know, need visual images or, you know, have some more sensory challenges.
Right, exactly. I mean, Lynn, in that same talk, Temple said, you know, you can tell a student with autism about something or you can show them. And the difference, for her at least, is profound. And her frustration is that she sees teachers and they're just telling people about things instead of showing them. And you're nodding with that as well. What do you think?
And I think that's been our experience, really looking to see what we can do visually, because we know that children learn so well given like a picture schedule, utilizing pictures to access language, and whatever it may be. So again, when you think about it's not always what you hear. It's so much about what you see and how do you integrate that and how do we find the best way to meet each individual, especially an individual with autism, where they're at. And everyone is going to be different. I mean, that old adage, one individual with autism is one individual with autism. Everyone is different. And you've got to individualize and you've got to meet that person where they are at. Not where we're at, but where they're at. And try to figure out what is the best way to get to them.
Katie, some of these themes that we're starting to mine, how will we see some of them reflected, or what are the kinds of things that we'll see reflected in the conference that's on Friday, thinking across the spectrum?
Well, I think about Temple, and she provides such great perspective for teachers. For some of our individuals who are nonverbal, she provides insight into the mind of an individual with autism, and I think that is a really powerful thing to see. Again, sensory processing with Dr. Dorit Beiler, she will provide some insight into things that, you know, are kind of an unknown for a lot of teachers and a lot of professionals and parents. So I think it will provide an insight into the treatment of autism and the success of an individual, how we can support individuals.
Mary Kelly is an associate professor of education at Hobart and William Smith. Mary, what struck you about listening to Temple's comments there at the TED Talk?
Well, one of the things that really stands out to me is that she's saying we need to connect with students' passions and interests and really build on their strengths and their interests. And if we follow that, I liked what Lynn was saying about that really needing to individualize. And as someone who works with folks who want to become teachers, I really encourage students to really think about what that message is, that we have to really connect with students' strengths, what really drives them, what interests them. All kids can learn, and we just really need to be able to tap into that and be effective teachers. And I also like the message that she's saying that maybe there's some people who haven't considered being teachers who would make great teachers. They need that support and the training to be able to be a really effective teacher, but maybe she'll bring some new people into the teaching profession too.
Let me turn to Professor Diana Baker, who teaches classes such as Understanding Autism, Children with Disabilities, and Teaching Elementary and Secondary Students with Disabilities. And, Diana, there is a risk for the host of this program and for everybody in speaking too broadly about autism, especially with Lynn's point that you've met one child with autism means you've met one child with autism. So, but I also do want to key in on something that Temple talked about in her talk. She tends to think, she kind of trifurcates people with autism. So she thinks of, there are visual thinkers like her, there are pattern thinkers, and there are word minds, as she described it. And again, that's her experience. I want to know, first and foremost, Professor Baker, what you make of that.
Well, first of all, I do absolutely agree with you. In my classes where I discuss autism, I do talk about the fact that people with autism are individuals. They learn differently. They have different interests. They have different strengths and weaknesses, just like all of us. But at the same time, I want them to come away from my classes knowing some of the commonalities among people with autism, or some ways that individuals with autism are more likely to perceive things, to learn. So I do think that you kind of need both. You need some knowledge. And the way that she talks about these three types of individuals with autism, that's not exactly how I think about it, but I also do think it's really helpful for people who are just starting to learn about autism, like some of my students, to be able to sort of start thinking about these different profiles that they might encounter, and to realize that if they're trying to connect with students or with individuals with autism in their families or in the community, that they have something to draw on in terms of understanding how these individuals might be processing information in a way that might be different. For most of my students are neurotypical. They don't identify as having autism. And so they may not be familiar with those different ways of processing.
Professor Baker, how common is it for you to meet people who have autism who are just as visual as Temple Grandin? I mean, this is somebody who, again, when you say that, when you talk to people, it's like seeing Google images. That I love that illustration because I can't relate to it, but that helps me understand it a little bit more. How often do you encounter that?
I really also love the way that she describes that. And in her TED Talk, she actually has these Google image visuals of church steeples flashing up. And that's really helpful for me also in terms of thinking, that's how she thinks about it, because it's very different from how I imagine things. And I think, I haven't met someone else who has described their experience just like hers, but I think there are elements of it that resonate with people with autism that I've met. So that's sort of, that's been helpful for me.
It's interesting. I mean, I always thought I was sort of a visual learner, and of course, not quite to that level. I don't know many people would be, but I also think the call to teachers to show instead of just talk about really is a universal thing. That might be better teaching anyway. What it magnifies is for children who are on the autism spectrum, it is especially sensitive that teachers are dynamic and are reaching out. I mean, it's true for everybody, but it's probably especially true for kids on the autism spectrum. And parents, listeners, I'd love to hear from you this hour. If you want to call the program and share your thoughts and experiences, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. My guests are talking about a couple of events coming up later this week with Temple Grandin, and one of those events is a Thursday night event, 7 p.m. at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. It's at the Vandervoort Room, and it's free. 7 p.m., so you can hear Temple Grandin for free there, and that is a great opportunity for the public. And then on Friday, Happiness House is working with C.P. Rochester and Al Siegel together on the Autism Conference, Thinking Across the Spectrum. You can still register. Starts at 8:30 a.m. It's at the Crosswinds Wesleyan Church in Canandaigua. And to register, you can call Katie directly.
Yes, you can call me.
What's the number?
At 315-789-7000.
6828.
What's the time commitment on Friday again?
Arrival starts at 8, registration from 8 to 8:30, and then 8:30 the speakers will begin.
Okay. And I want to go back to Cheryl Coppola for a second here, because for some reason, sometimes somebody says something and my brain goes to something that's not directly connected, but it reminded me of something. You talked about your child with Down syndrome and communicating through sign language, right? And I remember one of my favorite Radiolab episodes is an episode called Words. And if you have not listened, I cannot recommend this episode enough. If you're in the listening audience, find time to listen to the episode called Words by Radiolab. There's a moment that, if you're like me, you will probably pull the car over and cry a little bit, where you hear the story of Ildefonso. And this is the story of a person who is deaf and grew up in a very limited small community and essentially did not realize that there are names for everything. And had very little limited conversation or communication abilities. And finally, someone reached him. And I don't want to give away this moment that will probably make you cry, but it's going to happen. And it's this amazing thing. And I'm curious to know, Cheryl, for you as a parent, was there a moment or was it more gradual where you had more of a breakthrough in saying, boy, we can communicate more effectively and this is happening?
I think being in the field is a social worker in the field, that's what really, I mean, I was a social worker prior to having my children. Ty is the person with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. He has a twin brother, Austin. And the rarity of having one twin, a typical child,
yep,
and the other being having a disability is not common. So I think, of course, when I had the twins and I didn't know of the diagnosis, you're still shocked by the diagnosis. Because I had the circle of supports already, you know, around me, I think that did help. And that led me to help more. I mean, because I ran support groups and self-advocacy groups. I was already politically involved, lobbying and doing those kinds of things. It only, you know, I was just much more passionate about it, becoming a parent. So I think we're always surprised by what Ty does and what, I mean, he's 19 years old now, and we're always surprised. He just did a photo shoot for the celebration, the Galisano 30th anniversary celebration. And we were nervous about bringing Ty to the photo shoot, thinking that he would just follow my husband. And he connected to the photographer, Rick, so quickly that stranger awareness that I tried teaching him totally went out the window. So we were like, yay, we were so happy that he had such a wonderful shoot and that Rick became his best friend right away. At the same time, we just couldn't believe that he wasn't his father's shadow. So I think you always have those shocking moments throughout your child's life.
My concern would be the limits that could be placed on children, especially without supports. I mean, Cheryl, you're speaking very openly about the fact that at least your child is now 19. You've had these supports. You're there. You've got a community that's strong. And I don't know. I would love for Lynn, Katie, Cheryl, can you talk a little bit about what we do as a community to help families that maybe don't have those same supports, and you get a diagnosis and it's hard enough. Maybe I can't even imagine being a single parent, for example, or parents trying to get out of poverty, things like that. What do you do for families who face that? Lynn, let me start with you.
I'm thinking about Happiness House being on the forefront sometimes with families, because especially with us having an autism diagnostic clinic, but also doing evaluations early on, making those connections with families. And no matter what the diagnosis is, we can be there to support that, you know, that child, but also that family in so many different ways, whether it's educationally, whether it's in terms of support groups,
Service coordination.
Anything that a child or a family might need, and we don't mean for a limited amount of time. You might be looking at early years, which might be from birth, you know, to kindergarten age before children go off to school, and looking at a myriad of educational supports, therapeutic supports, and case management, whatever it may be that the family needs and the child needs. But then even post, you know, kindergarten, meaning going on to school, families can still stay very connected to Happiness House in terms of service coordination, supports in the communities, support groups for families of individuals with autism. Continuing with our supports in terms of advocacy, what we do, we can support families as they're entering difficult stages of their child's educational life or personal life, per se. So again, I think we're able to support in so many different ways.
I also would love to hear a little bit about the value of mentorship. Temple talked about the importance of mentorship. You're nodding right away.
Yes, I was just going to ask you about that.
But my concern is, again, you know, if you don't have those supports around you, it's hard enough to find them. For her, it was a science teacher who had this amazing background, and she all of a sudden has this great career. I say all of a sudden, she had spent years working on this, but she had this mentor and talks about it so strongly. For children on the autism spectrum to have that. And you're nodding too, Cheryl.
Yes. And I guess, you know, outside of work, I think that is the connection to the community. Hobart and William Smith has been very involved with Happiness House and their services, programs and services. I mean, their autism services or what they have is just a very small piece of, you know, the college and what they do. But when you're connected as a parent, I'm always being approached in the community as to information and referral. I mean, you as a parent have direct access. You walk the walk. It's not something, you know, you like to share openly. It is very difficult. I struggle with that sometimes, but it is my job, my responsibility as a parent to get out the accurate information, not just information, but the accuracy of information that is communicated. And I think that's what's so great about this conference is that the information, you can never get enough. Parents, whether you're a parent professional, a caregiver, people just need the information. They just eat the information up, and that's why somebody like Temple Grandin, who is going to speak to mentoring, I wanted, when you talked about mentoring, I wanted more about that because I can always learn better approaches or more things to do in order to help other families and help support that single parent that you talked about.
Absolutely. The conference she's talking about, if you're just joining us, is Thinking Across the Spectrum. It's this coming Friday, 3 days away, and you still can register. It's co-sponsored by Happiness House, CP Rochester, and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies. And it is Friday morning. Well, it starts Friday morning at about 8:30 at the Crosswinds Wesleyan Church in Canandaigua. And don't worry, Katie McGowan will give out that number a few more times before the end of the hour. Do it real quick, Katie. You want to call?
Yes, it's call 315-789-6828.
We're starting to get a lot of listener feedback, and let me sneak in a call here before our break. This is Mark in Pittsford. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. I've been listening. Great talk, by the way, and thank you to all the guests. But the term disability has been used a lot, and it's used in context with the people we're talking about on the autism spectrum, or any kind of difference, I should say. Isn't the disability really with the people that can only communicate and reach out to and interact with people that are like themselves? That, to me, is a disability. The people that we're talking about on the autism spectrum just have different abilities, and they have wonderful abilities.
Absolutely.
And you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I absolutely do, Mark. And let me get a CP Rochester take, and then we'll get an educational perspective take. Lynn, why don't you start there, Lynn? What would you say to his comment there?
Well, again, I think it's a great way to frame it. I think so often in our field, we hear the word disability, and that's what we tend to use. But I think you're absolutely right that, again, it's looking at everyone's perspective and looking at their ability, not what is keeping them from doing what we think of as the norm, and how do we accentuate the ability end of it without focusing on the part of it that denotes a disability. So, you know, it is absolutely true, and sometimes it's nice to be put back to where we need to be and not using the word as frequently or as often as we do, okay, and framing it differently.
And Professor Mary Kelly is a professor of education at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Professor, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, there's an expression in the disability rights movement that attitude is the real disability, and I think that mm-hmm. we do need to mm-hmm. think about ways that we really think about that the access is a barrier, not the person. And so really, I think we definitely eventually do need a new terminology. Mm-hmm. You know, we've come some distance from using an offensive term like handicap that represents often to people about begging or a difference of power mm-hmm. to saying that, you know, disability is a new term. Hopefully we come up with a better one. You know, we just had an exercise in class the other day where we had students define disability and ability. And where the discussion went to at the end is that these words, to distinguish them, wasn't useful, and that there's a whole range of ability and a whole range of ways of understanding the world and engaging with the world and strengths, and to not posit these words against each other. But well, I really had that spectrum of ability.
Well, this is probably a good moment for the host to tell you that you might have heard for years WXXI had the dialogue on disabilities. We call it Move to Include now. Mm-hmm. But the word disability,
nice.
The word disability is still in sort of our mission statement, and we're working on that. We're trying to do the best we can going forward. But I do want you to know, if you're listening to this program right now, that Move to Include is a partnership between WXXI and the Golisano Foundation. It's designed mm-hmm. to promote inclusion for people with intellectual and physical disabilities. And you can see all of our reporting at the website movetoinclude.org. But even in some of the language of our mission statement there, maybe it's mm-hmm. something that we are constantly trying to think about. And so, Mark in Pittsford, thank you for the phone call and helping us reframe that discussion. We're going to get a short break, and we're going to come back with more of your questions that have been coming in regarding autism in a number of different ways. We're talking about autism in relation to the visit later this week by Temple Grandin. Temple Grandin's a name that you might know very well, and you might have kind of heard it once or twice but not know it. Temple Grandin she's 68 years old now. She has become really, really well known for her work in animal husbandry and humane treatment of animals, particularly animals that end up being slaughtered for food. She's done a lot of work there and really highly regarded there. She's also someone with autism, and she speaks as an advocate for people with autism, and she is a powerful speaker there as well. She's got three events later this week. She's coming to the Finger Lakes. She's got a livestock handling talk and farm walk. I have no idea. Oh, there is registration. I was going to say, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that because I don't know, but there is registration. That's out at Lawnhurst Farms in Stanley. And so if you want to kind of go out and talk about animal husbandry, you can do that. And we're going to talk more on this program about that tomorrow in our second hour. Then Thursday night, Temple Grandin speaks at Hobart and William Smith College's Vandervoort Room at 7 p.m. It's free, open to the public. The content there is My Life with Autism and the Livestock Industry. And then on Friday, she's the keynote speaker at Thinking Across the Spectrum, sponsored by Happiness House, CP Rochester, and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies. That's an autism conference in Canandaigua. Let's get a short break and come right back with our guests and get more of your questions as well next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we sit down with astrophysicist Adam Frank, who's been writing about climate change. He says climate science shouldn't make us feel down. He says it's one of the greatest achievements of mankind and could help save our civilization. That and more with Adam. And then second hour, we continue our discussion on animal husbandry and what it's like to be a dairy farmer in 2015. Talk to you Wednesday.
New rules on overtime mean some low-income salaried employees will get paid extra. The companies say meeting the mark will be a tough balance.
The last thing you want to do in a healthcare setting is look at your watch and say, you've got your aid, you're out.
Navigating the new overtime, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. One of these days where we're so happy to have this great partnership. Well, we're happy to have it every day, but we're using our wonderful studios down there at Hobart and William Smith Colleges and WEOS. And I should mention it more often that if you are in the Finger Lakes, we're on 89.5 FM. That's Finger Lakes Public Radio and WEOS Geneva. Hope you're a member down there. And they've got studios there on campus and such a great partner with us. And Mary Kelly and Diana Baker are professors of education at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. They're there. And here with me in studio are three guests from CP Rochester and Happiness House, Cheryl Coppola, Linda Miko, and Katie McGowan. And a question from Jack, one of our listeners. He said he was surprised to hear that Temple Grandin got a diagnosis of autism around 1950, thought that maybe that would be much less common then, and wanted to know what the numbers were. Because my understanding now is, are we still at 1 in 68 Americans considered to have autism, Katie?
Yes, currently the numbers do reflect 1 in 68, and I think for boys it's 1 in 42. And I'm not quite sure on the girl number, but I do know that that is the current prevalence rates that the CDC reports.
Okay, so Jack is just kind of curious to know. I don't know exactly in 1950 or 51. I think 51 was, or 49 was her diagnosis, what it would have been, much less common.
Yes, much less common. I'm not even sure, honestly, how early she received her diagnosis, whether it was, like you said, previously addressed. I'm trying to remember what you had said.
Yeah, the doctors, 2 years old, they thought that she had brain damage.
Yes.
And that she might never speak. She did start speaking after intensive work through her parents and a nanny at age 4. All I knew going in was 1950. That would have been much more rare to get any kind of a diagnosis.
Yes.
So we've seen a lot of progress. So, Jack, we're at 1 in 68 now, and much more common in boys, you're saying, Katie.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And I guess we don't really know why. Do they know?
No, there doesn't seem to be a particular reason that has been reflected through the research, so they just continue to study.
And here's a much more technical question from Jake. And Jake says, this is a bit technical, but I don't think I'll find a better panel to ask it. Are your guests aware of any efforts to study autism spectrum disorders, specifically the sensory issues, using fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, in order to work out more details about how the brains of those with autism are structurally different than neurotypical individuals? Any suggestion on where to look if they can't help directly would be great.
I do know that this is currently in the early phases. I think there's a YouTube video of Temple Grandin having this procedure done, and it did show a very different structure in the brain when processing communication, but I don't think it is readily available at this point. The research is still very new, I believe. So that's the only way that I could speak to that.
Okay. Our professors at Hobart and William Smith, any insight there?
I know that the study Katie was talking about, there. Temple Grandin has had MRIs that have shown her visual cortex to be much, much more prominent than individuals who are not on the autism spectrum. And my understanding is there is autism research on all different planes going on at the same time. So the brain research is one aspect, the genetics research, and that all the time there are sort of small advances in understanding. But the complete picture is that there's still a lot we don't understand.
Professors Kelly and Baker, when you have students and you're talking about autism, I'm curious to know if they have a lot of questions and want full answers when we don't have them. You know, in other words, I think right now you have to kind of embrace that there's something you know, but there's a lot that we don't know, and that's okay, and there's a lot of research underway. Do your students come into class thinking they're going to get full answers and sort of an explanation when right now we're lacking some of that?
For me, I think in relation to autism in particular, that's one of the most exciting things to me, that in the last 10 years or so since I've been really, really interested in and studying autism, just in that short amount of time, the understanding has changed. And so I present it that way to my students, that this is really a dynamic time for us to be looking at autism. And my classes look a little bit about at the sort of scientific side and understanding the causes. And then a lot of what we do is like the folks there in the studio on the more clinical side and thinking about what treatments are appropriate. And on that side, there is a fair amount more understanding about particular strategies and interventions that work. So we get some answers and we have a lot of questions. And I think that's part of the fun for us.
I'm curious to know from our guests from CP Rochester and Happiness House, are you sort of similarly, I guess, excited or you know, interested in certain aspects of work going on right now? Lynn, Katie?
I would say that we are very excited because there are just so many opportunities right now. And really looking at the best way to support individuals with autism. And, you know, you learn something new every day. And it's wonderful to be able to be part of that, be part of the success and, you know, be part of the progress, the research. It's all very, it's just an exciting time.
Okay.
Very much so. And I think also part of it is that given the opportunity to try new things and realizing that, again, getting back to what is an individualized approach, but you may be trying, you know, something new that's come out on the forefront, something in relation to sensory integration, something new in terms of language acquisition, auditory processing, whatever it may be, and really look at what approaches can be used that are perhaps atypical from how you've approached it in the past. Mm-hmm. When I think about some of our clinical supports, what our clinicians are doing look very different now than what they might have been doing 10 years ago. Educational opportunities for our young students going into classrooms that are highly individualized, that have an approach that, you know, we say are autism-based classrooms because we know what children are beginning to know more about what children need and how we look at each of them individually and give them those supports day in and day out, and to see the growth that occurs very early on given those opportunities.
Okay. Cheryl, what excites you?
I think just that we're able to give the supports and services to the community, to the families that need them. I mean, the numbers, I believe, speak for themselves. Lynn can share that. I believe our evaluation clinic can't do enough. I mean, our team is constantly busy with evaluations. Our classrooms, our autism-based classrooms, are full. So parents want that integration. They want that support for their children. And what's interesting to me is that when the parents come in and, you know, you're nervous and anxious about the start of the first day, by the end of that school year, they want, the assistance and the support that the families receive, they almost, you know, they have a hard time leaving that. You know, it's separation anxiety at the end of the year for the parents, not for the students. So it's really role reversal.
Let me get back to the phones. Earlier, we had an email from a Jack. This is a different Jack. This is Jack in Himrod. Go ahead, Jack.
Hello, Evan?
Yes.
Yeah, great program, great topic. I just wanted to share with you, my father was involved with, I think, at the very beginning of Happiness House, back when it was on the Hobart campus on South Main Street, and was on the board of directors for a very long time. He himself had polio when he was younger and had suffered curvature of the spine since he was about 8 or 9 years old. But apropos an earlier comment about how to phrase, handicap and so forth, he said it was not a handicap. He said it was a defect, not a handicap. And he worked for establishing programs that would help people overcome these defects and not refer to it as a handicap or even a defect for that matter. But he felt that they were as entitled to do as much as any able-bodied person, and work to develop programs to help them do that.
Well, Jack, I appreciate that, and I'm sure the community appreciates your dad's work there.
Absolutely.
It's great insight. Thanks for calling, and thanks for listening today.
Okay. Well, indeed. I listen every chance I get.
Thank you, Jack. It's a good reminder. And another caller, Bernard in Fairport, wants us not only to maybe think about language terms, but think about positive instead of turning things into negative. This is Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it's different from the quote-unquote the normal person, if you can define a normal person.
Or neurotypical, but yeah.
But I've worked with autism people in the software business, and quite honestly, they brought a new view of how to do things. Mm-hmm. They were very useful, very friendly, et cetera, et cetera. And so the biggest issue was they weren't traditional. So other people had to kind of grow up and change their view of society, and it's kind of like if you transfer yourself to Japan or China or India, you have to deal with different people. So I think that some of them are very smart, very useful, and they do help the society. And I mean, Gannon is, she's just really great. She's not, I don't think of her as autism. I think about how efficient she is at doing what it is she does and how knowledgeable it is and how a new view of the world she took. So, you know, I think there's some very positive things about it. Now, that's not to say that we need to support it and create it, but I think we need to deal with it and get along with it and look for the good news. And thanks very much for the show.
Thank you, Bernard. It's a great point. And you got a lot of smiles in the studio because sometimes we focus so much on challenge, and it certainly is a challenge, but there is so much good. Katie McGowan, you want to add anything there?
There's just so much, I think, about there's this famous quote that is, if they can't learn the way we teach, we need to teach the way they learn. And I think that that encompasses so many things, addressing mentorship, mm-hmm. and thinking long-term about employment as well, trying to find not fit the individual to the job, fit the job to the individual, finding ways to harbor that success and promote it.
Let me ask Diana Baker, who is an education professor at Hobart and William Smith. One of the classes that Diana teaches, my understanding, Diana, is teaching elementary and secondary students with disabilities. And I'm curious to know if you think the teachers of the world now are, in general, more equipped and doing a better job at recognizing differences, at integration, at all of these things that, you know, I guess I just feel like 10 years ago as a reporter, I can't tell you how many parents I talked to, parents of children with autism who were frustrated that a school did this or a school did that, or there was this incident or that, and there was a question on, you know, are we going to sort of get with it as an educational community? Diana, how are we doing with that?
You know, I think it's complicated, and I think educating students with disabilities in an inclusive environment is something that's really, really important and really hard to do well. But I think that I like to think, at least, that in our program here at HWS and in the communities that we work with, teachers are trying really hard and being really successful in educating students with all different kinds of learning styles and abilities. And that someone, I can't remember who, mentioned earlier that when you teach things in different ways, or when you're aware of the different ways that students learn, a lot of different students in the class will benefit from the way that you're presenting the material, not only those students who have so-called disabilities that you're targeting. So I think, I do think things are improving, and I think, you know, there's of course still progress to be made. But
And Diane, I think at a very baseline level, it has to start with the idea that teachers have to know that a one-size-fits-all approach to teaching and sometimes even disciplining in class is unfair to just about everybody.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, individualizing how you teach in education is something that as special educators, that's what we've always been doing. And I think more and more all teachers are beginning to think that way, and thinking if something's not working, then you need to look at like Katie was saying, you need to look at how you're teaching it and not assume that there is some sort of problem with how the students are learning it, but you need to examine what your practices are.
All right, just a brief comment from our guest here in studio. How do you, that's such a blanket generalized comment. How are schools doing with autism? I mean, it's, you can't answer it in one sentence, but what kind of progress are we seeing, you know, for example?
I would say that teachers are seeking to educate themselves. We host a monthly autism training that's free to the community, and they're always packed with teachers, teacher aides, who really want to educate themselves about what is going on and the way that they can best support the individuals that they work with. And I think that that movement forward is something new and exciting in the community, is to see teachers really trying to educate themselves to better meet their students' needs.
We got about a minute left here. Let's have our guests from Hobart and William Smith, the professors Mary Kelly and Diana Baker, remind us what's going on Thursday night. Thursday night, Temple Grandin's going to be here at 7 o'clock. What do you want the community to know, professors?
Well, we're so excited to have her here. It's free, wheelchair accessible, open to the public, 7 o'clock. I would say come early. We've had a lot of interest, and so we're excited to have her here. But, you know, parking is always an issue, so I would say probably come early. And we'll have students there who are volunteering to help. If you're not unfamiliar with the building and the Scandling Center, we'll help get you to the right room.
Very good. I'm not surprised at all to hear you've had a lot of interest. And Katie McGowan, let people know how they can register, whether you're a parent, you're someone who wants to learn more about the resources. Thinking Across the Spectrum is an autism conference. Temple Grandin's the keynote speaker. It's Friday morning in Canandaigua. You can still register. How, Katie?
You can call 315-789-6828.
And do it again.
315-789-6828.
Have a great conference there. And
thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Katie, from CP Rochester and Happiness House. And professors Mary Kelly and Diana Baker from Hobart and William Smith, thanks for taking the time to come out to our WEOS studios. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Hope you've been listening, whether it's on WXXI, WRUR, WEOS 89.5 FM in the Finger Lakes. Maybe you listen on our mobile app or on WXXINews.org. So many ways to interact with our program. Thanks to all of our guests and Val LaBanca, our engineer, Mike Black, for helping with all of the connections made this hour to get it all set for you. Have a great afternoon. I'm Evan Dawson, and you've been listening to Connections on Member-Supported Public Radio.